I am recording now. Hello, everybody. Welcome to a special episode of the Flicks of Doom podcast, the official movie podcast here at geeksofdoom.com. My name is Justin Vactor. Our usual host, Empress Eve, is not available this week, so I have called upon my two favorite friends in the digital world to talk Tron Legacy with me. So this episode is going to be all about Tron Legacy. Not going to have any of the other talk that we normally do, but we are in for a treat, my friends, because Tron Legacy was a treat as well. So without further ado, my two friends that I mentioned earlier are Mr. Frank Gramblings, who has been on the show before to talk Toy Story 3. Mr. Frank Gramblings, how are you doing?
Fine, thanks. How are you guys?
Yeah, we're doing good. And my other friend and the most electric man in podcasting.
Greetings, programs.
Revision 3's own Graham Hancock. Hello, Graham. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Excellent. As I am excellent because two of my favorites are here with me to talk Tron Legacy. So let's get right into it. First off, I wanted to know, what was your guys' experience with the original Tron? So I'll ask Frank first.
Original Tron was way before my time, so I was always aware of it. And I had only seen it fairly recently, a couple of years ago. And I only saw it once. So, I always liked it. I thought it was kind of cool. I was sort of young when I saw it, so I wasn't too into it. What I thought was interesting about it was that I can understand how the visuals must have been really outstanding at that time, and the story is really kind of out there. So I always thought it was an interesting movie, and it was like sort of an interesting contribution to film because of the wacky sci-fi story it brought and the visuals being as different as they are. And looking back on it, it's kind of, you know, any college student can make a film that looks as good or better than that. Mm-hmm. At the time, it was really something new and it was pushing the envelope. So I respect it for that reason.
All right. And Graham, what was your experience with the original Tron?
I think I saw the original Tron when I was like 12. And I honestly didn't remember much about it. Mm. I remember it being just kind of visually interesting, but I don't remember what it was. You know, I didn't remember what it was about or anything like that. It actually took me rewatching it again recently to kind of go, oh, that's what this movie was about. Mm. You know, it just didn't stick in my mind. And it's funny because it was after I saw Tron Legacy, because I saw a screening earlier this week and I was like, oh, I want to watch Tron first, but I didn't get a chance because the screening was so last minute. But I did rewatch the original Tron, and I'm surprised at how well it holds up. I mean, it was a very, after kind of looking up all of the stuff that went into the production of it, it's essentially an animated movie. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the director was an animator, and he's like, I want to make this movie about being inside of a computer, and we're going to use these animated elements for when they're in the computer world. And then they mixed in live action elements and stuff. But I was surprised at how well it held up, even after seeing Tron Legacy.
Yeah.
And it had a great I think that it was a movie that was just for itself. It wasn't for anyone. It wasn't for geeks at the time, I don't think. Mm. I don't think it was aimed at anyone in particular. It was just a director that had a really interesting idea. He's like, I want to show people what is going on inside of their computers. And this concept of a personal computer was very new in 1982.
Yeah. And that was the year I was born. So Tron for me was something that I came to kind of late to the game as well, where I actually was introduced, I think, to the video games first. And then I always had Tron in the back of my mind, but I never sat down and watched it all the way through. So kind of like you, Graham, I wanted to see it before the new one. So I ended up watching it just a few days before my screening, and I was set for the worst. I was prepared for the worst because everyone was telling me, oh,
it doesn't hold up. Yeah.
You're going to fall asleep. It's so boring. and everything. And I was actually, maybe it was because of my lowered expectations, but like you, I was surprised at how much I enjoyed it. And I think it holds up pretty good. It's not a perfect movie, and I don't think it's, you know, the greatest thing ever, but for a 28-year-old movie, and for there are so many things with the themes of the movie, and like you said, Frank, the technology and the revolutionary technology at the time, even though the graphics look dated by today's CGI standards, I was still able to place myself in the world of 1982 and say, okay, these were revolutionary at the time. So I enjoyed my experience with the first Tron, and I think a lot of people's impressions of Tron Legacy are very similar to their impressions of the original Tron, at least from what I'm seeing from reviews and from what people are saying. Like, if they found the first one boring, I've seen a lot of them say that Tron Legacy is boring, and it's pretty much the exact same story. So I think my enjoyment of the first Tron kind of leaked over into Tron Legacy.
Yeah, and same here.
There are, I don't know if you guys have had a chance to check out, there are some kind of expanded universe type things with Tron that's been coming out. Marvel released a prequel comic that tried to bridge the gap between the two movies. And there was also an Xbox and PlayStation 3 video game that takes place in between the two movies and sets up kind of a prequel to what happens in Tron Legacy. Ooh. So I was actually able to read both comics and finish the video game. And the game is not very good, but the actual story, the prequel story, I really enjoyed how it sets up Tron Legacy. And in the movie, Korra's character, she mentions your character in the video game, and it's kind of a passing line where she says, a sympathetic program helped me out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, so in the theater, I kind of like, you know, puffed up my chest a little bit. I was like, yeah, I was that. But I looked around and it was like, nobody got it. I was like, okay, I'm the only one who played the video
game. You're probably the only one there that had actually finished the game.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, you don't have to know it, and it doesn't really affect your viewing too much, but it's I think it's for people who really want an expanded take on the mythology, and you want to get into the story and the world a little bit more. It's kind of a fun little thing. So I would suggest anybody who's interested, the prequel comic and the video game both kind of shed a little more light on the backstory, but it's not essential to your viewing. And also, before we get into our thoughts on Tron Legacy, I did want to say, I think a lot of people came up and asked me, a lot of younger people asked me, do I have to see the first Tron in order to understand Tron Legacy? And I think you don't, it's not essential, but I think it's a richer experience if you have seen the first Tron, because it's sort of like, okay, the difference between someone telling you about something and you actually experiencing it, that's kind of the difference, because in Tron Legacy, they do, you know, they in exposition, they kind of go over what happened in the first movie, but I think it's a richer experience if you've actually, you watch it and you see it unfold for yourself.
I found myself enjoying the beginning parts of Tron Legacy after having seen rewatched the original Tron, because he revisits the arcade.
Yeah.
He goes up to that room where Flynn and Alan were talking about how Dillinger stole his program, and Garrett Hedlund's character Sam spends some time looking at that part of the room where they had that conversation. And I remember I was like, oh, that's so cool. They're actually like kind of spending time showing us these. So, I mean, they're not really iconic, but they're memorable sections of the arcade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess we should also say that the original Tron was not a success either in critically or at the box office. So it's really a cult classic more than anything else.
It was a movie that was received well, I think. Not universally well, but I remember Roger Ebert gave it 4 stars and said that it was visually spectacular, but lacking in story, which is exactly what he said about Tron Legacy.
Yeah. And so, that's also a complaint I heard with Avatar last year, which kind of leads me into, as we talk about Tron Legacy, there was an article by IO9, and I sent it to Frank before he saw Tron Legacy, where it said, Tron Legacy is this year's Avatar. And so I can, Frank, I actually am curious, now that you've seen Tron Legacy, I want to get your take on that in a second, but I kind of 100% agree with that in that there are the way that Tron Legacy was able to put me into the world, that's the exact same thing that happened to me with Avatar, where I felt like I was in Pandora and it was a living, breathing place and I actually wanted to be there. That was the exact same thing that happened to me with Tron Legacy, where I was sucked in from the opening. I mean, from the first Daft Punk note that hits your ears, like I was, they had me. Like I was already sucked into the movie. And just from there, as the universe just expanded, it was a place that I wanted to live and breathe in. So that was kind of my similarities between Avatar. And of course, you know, there's the surface elements as well, where it looks great, but the story may not be the best story of all time. So, Frank, I wanted to get your thoughts. Now that you've seen Tron Legacy, how do you... Because I know you didn't really like Avatar that much. Is that correct?
I didn't like it from the story standpoint, mm-hmm. Yeah. Visually, I was blown away by it. I saw it in IMAX 3D, and I was completely blown away by it.
Yeah.
But I thought that it was, very weak in the story department, mm-hmm. and that really was a big deal for me. So it made me enjoy it less than I would have if it had a good story driving it. Tron Legacy, I'll say that I agree with that assessment, but not because I didn't enjoy it the same way I didn't really enjoy Avatar's story. Mm-hmm. I think Tron Legacy was as visually stunning as Avatar was for me, and I know it wasn't shot the same way, and I know it was shot in 2D for the most part, but it really blew me away visually, because I just as a geek, like, it's beautiful, it's eye candy, it's gorgeous, and the story, as much as it's maybe not the most brilliant story of all time, it's pretty original, or at least the way it was executed was pretty original, and it was way better. I watched the original Tron again the night before I saw the Legacy, and I thought it was heads and shoulders above, just way, way better than the original story. Mm. And the character development was way, way better for me. So, yeah, I'll agree with that assessment. It is this year's Avatar in that it's mostly driven by the visuals, and the story is not as brilliant as it could be. But I enjoyed this as a whole. I'll say I actually enjoyed this more than Avatar.
Mm. And Graham, what were your thoughts on kind of the Avatar comparisons that I've been seeing?
I feel like, yeah, that's definitely a good way to put it. This year, this was this year's technical film, where mm-hmm. people are going to see it for the experience of having seen it.
Yeah.
Where I think that's what drove people to go see Avatar in just huge numbers, was like, this is something that you have to see in the theater because you will never experience it that way again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think Tron is the same way. I think you have to see it on a very large screen in 3D and 7.1 surround sound, because after that, the only time you're going to get to see it is in your home theater. And if you have a really nice home theater, then maybe you'll be able to relive that experience. But it's I think that's a good comparison. But as in terms of the movie itself, it's a lot like that. It's a very technical, it's a visual achievement, a technical achievement of a movie. The story, while I agree with most critics saying that the story could have been more compelling and could have been more it could have offered more mm-hmm. to the viewer. But I think at some point I accepted the fact that that's not what I came to see. I came to see light cycles and disc being mm-hmm. thrown and amazing visuals and 3D, you know. So in terms of what I was expecting, I got what I was expecting. Yeah. And I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and I was the exact same way. And like I said, I was just immersed in the world. I was on the grid the entire movie. And even to the point where I've read like many reviews since the movie's come out. And it's kind of, this seems to be the most polarizing movie of the year.
Oh, yeah.
Where
mm-hmm.
either people love it or they hate it. And I'm really trying to grasp the people's hatred that I've seen come out from just critics and people on Twitter. You know, this is a terrible movie, worst movie of the year. It's just very hard for me to understand that, just because, like I said, I was so immersed in the world and I felt captivated by the movie from the entire time. And I think a large part goes to the Daft Punk score, which mm-hmm. is up there with, and I talked to Graham on Twitter about this, it's up there with Inception and How to Train Your Dragon and The Social Network for my favorite scores of the year. And this actually, I think this is the first time that I've had a score enhance the movie. Like, I feel like the movie is better.
Yes.
I feel like, yeah, if you didn't have those electronic elements that Daft Punk introduced over the top of those orchestral feelings, then the movie would take on a completely different feel. If it was just all electronic music or all orchestra music, the movie would be different depending on which way that swings. Mm-hmm. But the way they did it, they sort of meshed this really epic orchestra score with Daft Punk's beats and their processing. It's really made it something unique, and they really kind of stepped up the score for this movie. And there's many times in this movie where the score sort of makes the scene that you're watching. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I've never seen a score more perfectly, like you just said, like the electronic part of it is just so, it's interweaved into the fabric of the film, and it's mm-hmm. just like, I can't imagine a better fit for a movie. You know, let alone just this movie, but any movie, a score to a, like, I feel like John Williams' Superman score or, you know, Danny Elfman's Batman score, just, it's so perfect for this film, and it would not fit any other film. So it's just, that was just amazing to me. And I've been listening, like, I've had the score in my head even when I haven't been listening to it. It's just been, it's just been there. So,
yeah. This is the first time I can honestly say that noticing a score, the score drawing attention to itself has actually been a good thing.
Yeah.
Usually, if I'm noticing the score while I'm watching the film, that I consider that a bad
thing.
Takes
you out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. It should just complement the film. It should just be there. But in this case, it really draws attention to itself in the best way possible.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love this score. This is actually my favorite score of the year.
Yeah. Yeah. I 100% agree with you. It's just amazing to me the work that they were able to do, and just for their first, you know, film score. It's
they have done a movie before.
Oh,
and it was an old anime called something Blue Star 6666 or something like it was something that nobody saw. Okay, and I haven't even seen it. I just have friends that told me that Daft Punk had already scored something. So there's a whole Daft Punk album that was just the soundtrack to this anime film. Mm-hmm. Interstellar. Yeah.
Interstellar 5555.
Okay. Well, I was totally wrong on the title.
That's cool.
I hope you're with me in spirit that I knew that existed.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
So, but this was I think Daft Punk with this score, they worked with a composer. The composer did most of the orchestra stuff. And then they worked with him to say, okay, we want to change this to electronic, or we want to introduce this synth beat or this synth element into this. And so it was a collaborative thing. Although Daft Punk gets their name on the front of the album, obviously to sell the album.
Yeah. I think I saw them thanking Hans Zimmer. I think they worked with him.
I think the guy's name was Joseph something.
Okay.
The actual composer of the orchestra elements of the soundtrack. Mm-hmm. But Daft Punk had oversight. They had influence over the entire thing. So not a single sound came across the speakers that wasn't approved by Daft Punk, you know?
Yeah.
So,
right.
Mm-hmm. And they did an amazing job.
And they were actually in the film as well. They had
that was such a great
that was really cool. Yeah.
That scene, I'm thinking I'm walking away from that end of line club scene as my favorite part of the movie. So many cool things happened in that part.
I would agree.
You had the Daft Punk cameo. You had the cameo from the director of the first movie. He was the bartender.
Oh, right.
At the club, the director of the first movie. I don't know why his name is...
Steven Lisberger?
Yes, Steven Lisberger.
Yeah, I heard he was in it. I didn't realize that was him. That's cool.
So he was the bartender in the club. And then the fight scene that takes place. And then easily the best scene, in my opinion, with Jeff Bridges is when he shows up in the middle of that fight. Yeah.
Oh man,
Daft Punk score just goes nuts.
So epic.
Love that part. Yeah. And the neat little illuminated Jedi hoodie, that was fun.
Yeah, I got a very Neo vibe from The Matrix when he walked in.
Yeah.
But you know what? Similar to Neo, I've heard some critics talking about kind of a lot of the flaws of the film I've been trying to analyze. And one of the things that a lot of people didn't like or did not understand was, if Jeff Bridges had this power, why didn't he just use it, you know, all these times? But I don't feel like that's a valid criticism of the film. I think they explain, you know, that's another thing. There are certain things where people were saying they didn't understand it. I felt that the movie explained most of people's questions. And
yeah, it was a very easy to understand movie.
Yeah.
Unlike the original Tron.
And that was similar to Inception. I remember a lot of people saying, a lot of the negative reviews I read of Inception were, oh, I just didn't understand it. I didn't get this. So it's a bad movie.
They just weren't invested enough in it to listen to the explanation, I think.
Yeah. And same with Inception, same with Tron Legacy. It's just very hard for me to grasp or understand how you could not be sucked into this world, how you cannot understand what's going on. I did not feel that. I did not have that criticism of the movie at all. There are so many things that I enjoyed about the film. There are a few things that I did not enjoy, but I want to talk about some of the things that I enjoyed first and foremost. And that was, first off, you just mentioned Jeff Bridges, and anytime he was on camera, I was giddy. And anytime he was
so dreamy
speaking, I think currently he is my favorite actor. After seeing him in this, I saw True Grit right after Tron Legacy, and so
I'll have to ask you what you think of that. I haven't seen it, but I really
It was definitely one of the best films of the year. But seeing his performance in that and in Tron Legacy on back to back days, it was just kind of like, I was infused with Jeff Bridges, and I saw he hosted Saturday Night Live last night. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet.
I haven't seen it either.
Yeah. So right off the bat, Jeff Bridges rules. Anytime he was acting, I was enjoying it. The universe itself, I thought, was amazing, and I heard a lot of people complaining about, well, they didn't do enough with taking the technology into today's kind of internet world, and I heard the director actually talking about this, and he said he wanted to embrace the original aesthetic, but evolving it to something that felt more appropriate for 2010, but he didn't want to make an internet movie. He didn't want to make, you know, The Matrix, or he wanted the world of Tron to feel like Tron. And I felt like he accomplished that goal. And so I enjoyed
totally
it.
Okay with what they did in the movie, because there, you've got to think about where Sam's character is and where Jeff or where Sam or not it's Flynn right
yeah, yeah. Kevin I think Kevin, Kevin Flynn, Flynn is the father and Sam Flynn is the son.
I get Sam and Kevin mixed up now because of the newness of the movie, but they're inside an old 1980s computer. So it's not connected to the internet. You know, so I'm able to forgive the film because he's in this old computer that's underneath his father's arcade.
Right.
And there's no internet connected to it. So it's all in its own, of its own world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's the world that Clue created, or that Clue and Kevin Flynn created together inside of this one computer.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm completely okay with that as well. And I think, I mean, we're all pretty tech savvy, and Frank and I actually do a tech podcast together. And so that, we're all hooked into this digital internet world, and I think for the most part, we're all okay with them not doing an internet or speaking on the internet. There was that one kind of, there was a Wi-Fi line that's thrown in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But that was funny and inaccurate.
Frank, how did you feel about them not doing sort of more an internet type of movie?
It wouldn't have worked. It honestly wouldn't have worked, because that would have complicated the story so much. Can you imagine if, on top of all of this, we had the internet and it is connected to the outside world? Can you just imagine the chaos that would ensue if they had, first of all, try to come up with a story that will work with that, all right?
It's too broad.
Good luck with that, right? So it made way more sense. And just within the context of the Tron, you know, universe, it made way more sense just to leave it the way it was, separated off into its own little computer, and that is and that's the way it was. It made way more sense to me to leave it that way. I didn't really even give it a thought, honestly. It wasn't an issue for me.
And I was the exact same way, like I said. And people were already complaining that the story as it is too complex and things weren't explained. So adding the internet to that would just multiply things, you know, millionfold. So
you'd have pagers, though.
Oh, yeah.
We're connected in some way.
Yeah. So that was good. We've already spoken about the visuals of the movie, just spectacular. The design of the world and the suits that they wore. Just I loved the use of light and color. Like those things kind of get me on a base level when I see something that's very the contrast of the colors and the lights just very just hit me on a core level. So they're doing things that had never been done before visually, like. Like the suits, they had these revolutionary weaving of electroluminescent lamps through rubber and neoprene that had never been done before, and so that
all of the lights on the suits, most of them were practical lights. Half were not added in post like in the original movie.
Yeah, and I'd be interested.
Which is so impressive.
I'd be interested. We all saw this in 3D, right?
Yes.
Okay. One of the kind of downsides of 3D is that it takes kind of the brightness of the film down when you're looking through those glasses. So I'm just kind of wondering what it looks like in 2D. And Frank, you wanted to see it in 2D, right?
I did, because I'm not a huge fan of 3D. And I'll be honest. Well, before the film started, tell me if this happened for you guys too. It probably
did. I know what you're
about
to say.
Part of this is shot in 2D, but leave your glasses on the whole time.
Yeah.
I kept my glasses off until it went to 3D. Mm-hmm. Until Sam was on the grid, I kept my glasses off, because that entire first 15-20 minutes was in 2D.
Yeah.
And even when they were on the grid, parts of it were, you know, certain scenes were shot in 2D.
Yeah.
Or at least just parts of scenes. But that was a big thing for me. I felt like I was watching the movie through sunglasses, which I essentially was, but
there's a technical reason why they told you to keep your glasses on, because when they make a 3D movie that has 2D scenes in it, and even the 3D scenes, the person, the colorist, the person who actually makes black, black, and white, white,
color corrected
it for those glasses.
Mm. Right, right, right.
So if you take the glasses off, you'll notice that everything you're watching is a little brighter.
Mm.
And it's not because the glasses are making the film darker for you. It's you're seeing the film that has been brightened in post to compensate for how dark the glasses make it for you.
Mm. Makes perfect sense. I just never thought of it that way. Yep. Mm. You're right. So makes sense.
So that's why that little, I love the disclaimer at the beginning, because there's one thing I love being told. I love being told what to do as a moviegoer right before the movie starts. So the whole audience is just kind of chuckling like, okay, you know, I just paid an extra dollar and you're telling me that this has some 2D scenes in it. That's a ripoff. You know, like,
I don't know if that was necessary, because
it wasn't. It was totally not. Like, and I think somebody might have complained. I think they were just trying to ward off that one person that was going to storm out of the theater and demand his money back because 15 minutes of the movie weren't in 3D.
I actually think Disney went a little overboard with trying to please everybody, because not only with that little disclaimer at the beginning, which that just had me through the entire movie. I kept, oh, wait, is this in 2D? Is this in 2D? Oh, wait. So it kind of like, it was in the back of my mind the entire time. But also with
really only the beginning and ending bookend parts. And so it's sort of like The Wizard of Oz. When you go into the digital world, you're in 3D.
Yeah.
The entire rest of the movie.
And not only that, but it expands to fill the IMAX frame. Just
I wish I could have seen it in IMAX 3D so I can know. But I heard it was a lot like The Dark Knight, where it would exceed the framing and cover the whole screen, which that should be awesome.
And that was Dark Knight was my best IMAX experience I've ever had because of those full frame shots. And so this one, it was no different. Like the first time you see the I forgot what they're called, not the tanks, but the, you know, the thing that picks him up, when he first gets in.
They're recognizers, right?
Yeah,
I think they are.
When that comes down, it goes into full screen, and like you, it looks like you're actually seeing this in real life. So
go see it again.
Yeah, me too. I wish there was a good IMAX theater around here, but there isn't.
That's surprising. And you're in New York. I think they would have.
Well, again, I'm in the suburbs. Oh, there is one, but it's a terrible. It's a curved screen.
Yeah,
it's really not a true IMAX screen, but they call it. It's not a true IMAX screen. Call it that.
You know, I wish they would actually just streamline all of the things that are called IMAX and make it one experience.
Yeah, because
they should.
there's a lot of like false branding going on.
Well, there was for a while, and that's what I think Aziz Ansari got mad about, the whole LIMAX thing. Now they've rebranded LIMAX theaters. Like there's the Cinemark XD theater, and AMC has their own version. Mm-hmm. So then they've rebranded that, and I'm happy about that because I will gladly go see a movie in an XD theater. Just don't call it IMAX and don't charge me three extra bucks for the IMAX name. And I must say, I've watched a lot of really good movies in an XD theater, and I've totally enjoyed it.
Mm. Yeah. Frank, I don't know if you have this same experience as me, but just kind of playing off your Avatar thing, I think I came to a realization with this movie, and, you know, Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter's cool and everything, but I think I'm just more of a science fiction guy than I am a fantasy guy. And so I think Tron hits me, again, it hits me to my core of I am a digital being in an analog world. And so it's like Tron just hits every part of me that loves science fiction and loves technology. And that's what I kind of liked about the original as well. So I think for me, I was more sucked into this world than I was, say, Avatar or Narnia or something like that, just because I'm just not attuned to the fantasy world like I am to kind of this technological world. I don't know if you have a similar thing or not.
Absolutely. Yeah. I am not a huge fan of fantasy films or stories for that matter. It's just not, it's never really been my thing. I've read a bunch of the Harry Potter books and Lord of the Rings and that whole genre, Narnia, but I've never been as big a fan of it as I am with sci-fi. Sci-fi just clicks for me. Mm-hmm. So this definitely, I enjoyed this more than Avatar. Certainly a big reason is because I enjoy sci-fi stories more than I enjoy fantasy stories.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I completely agree. I am definitely more, to use your phrase, a digital being.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't my only gripe with Avatar. Like, oh, it's a fantasy story and I don't like fantasy stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the Lord of the Rings movies, their fantasy stories, and they're outstanding.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just, I feel that I felt more connected to these characters. That's the thing that usually drives a movie for me is the characters, mm-hmm. is how can I get into the characters? And then obviously with this film being as engrossing as it is in sucking you in to the grid, it really, the characters were really, I thought pretty compelling and pretty interesting. And I thought that Kevin Flynn, especially in this movie, was just such a badass.
Yeah.
Which one? The old Kevin Flynn or the young Kevin Flynn?
Well, you mean we Kevin Flynn or him, Clue. Way. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, we have to talk about Clue. I've been.
Yeah. And I was actually going to save Clue for the things I did not like about the movie. Because,
okay.
Let's get into that real quick. Like, some of my biggest problems with the movie were the Clue, the digital Jeff Bridges for the Clue face. First of all, it starts off in 1989 in the real world. That's the first time we see the character. And, of course, Jeff Bridges has aged since 1989. So, digitally, they would have to go back and do his face. But to me, when I first saw that, I felt like they emphasized it a little too much. I would have preferred if it was, okay, he's got his back to us, or maybe he's got his face turned in the shadow. But when he turns and he's in full frame and the light hits his face,
same team or something like that.
Yeah. I felt like at that point they were like, oh, look how great this looks. And I just don't.
We can do.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were really proud of it.
I don't think the technology is there yet.
No.
I think it. To me, it really. Do you guys remember that Final Fantasy movie that came out about a decade ago?
I know exactly where you're going. Yeah,
it was all CG characters, and to a certain extent, you have that with the Robert Zemeckis kind of the Polar Express and the Christmas Carol. Doing realistic humans creeps a lot of people out, like that, and that's what I've heard a lot about this Clue is that he just looks creepy. Whenever he has to, like. When he's still, and it's just kind of, I guess, a still frame, he looks okay. But when he has to move, that's when he becomes super creepy.
Yeah. When he spoke.
Yeah. And I think I know you guys are both Pixar fans. I know for a lot of years, Pixar kind of the reason they've done more animated looking humans is because humans, because we are all humans. We live in a human world. That's the thing that we see on a constant basis. Yeah. So we know exactly what a human looks like. We know exactly what or how a human behaves and different things. So that's we are the harshest critics on what a digital human looks like. And so that's the hardest thing to do. So that's why they've done like The Incredibles or that more exaggerated features. Well,
they chose to animate. I mean, most of the movie was done with body doubles and Jeff Bridges' actual acting.
Yeah.
And then they recorded his face and digitally posted over it.
Yeah.
But then you're thinking the one thing they decided to animate was the hardest thing to possibly animate.
Yeah.
A human face.
Yeah.
And the hardest thing to get across as being believable. I think for the effort, they did a pretty good job. It's not all the way there, but it's damn close.
Yeah, you know? It is.
Well, like there are a couple scenes in the movie where if I was not told or I didn't know already that this was a digital character, that it would have fooled me.
Yeah. Well, I was able to much more buy into it and believe it in the digital world than I was in the actual world. So that, that, like I said, them kind of emphasizing it in the real world kind of threw me off. And it also felt like, do you guys remember the X-Men 3 when they kind of, Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen, when they kind of de-aged them? I got that vibe as well. So it was kind of like it's standing out like a sore thumb to me that's a digital face.
You see that. And there's things about it. It looks rubbery. It looks lifeless. And there's these things that create a cognitive dissonance in everyone because you're looking at that and you're like, that's not real. They're fooling me.
Yeah.
You know, and that's part of your head is screaming that at you the whole time you're watching.
Yeah. And I felt like I was looking at an animatronic at Disney World.
Yeah, I could see that. And also, because I had just played the video game right before, it felt like a video game cutscene to me.
Oh, yeah. Type of
animation. So it's I commend them for their efforts, just like Graham. But to me, it's just I wish they had not emphasized it as much because I just don't think the technology is there yet.
I think 40-50% of the movie has Clue in the digital form in it.
Yeah.
And you know, face right in front of the camera. There's hardly, you would think they would have played more to the whole, you know, shooting from the side.
Yeah.
From the back.
No, they did. They went right for the close-ups.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
But it was, you know, the only movie that I've ever been fooled, I think, was Avatar in the Zoe Saldana character.
I thought
she was in blue makeup. I did not realize.
It does feel like that.
Yeah, that was. And they. I was watching. It was actually a Twit special that they did about Tron Legacy, and they showed Jeff Bridges. They had this similar kind of setup that Avatar did, where they had the little cameras right in front of his face, and they were.
Put dots all over.
Yeah. But it was not Avatar level for me, at least.
There were a couple times in Tron Legacy where they were in the right environment, or I think. Specifically, whenever he was in the ship and it was the red lighting.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that fooled me pretty well. Mm-hmm. And then I think I want to point out the one time where I felt like if they had done it more like this, then it would have been more believable for the entire movie. But when he was going around Flynn's apartment and picking up things. Mm. And so they nailed the facial expressions. In that part of the movie. Now, where they did it the worst was the end of the movie when he's making that speech.
Oh, yep.
Yeah. That was awful.
Yep.
They could have cut out that entire part of the movie, and I wouldn't have said anything about how bad the graphics for Blue's face was. But that was pretty unbelievable and not very realistic. But there were times in the movie where I was like, oh, this is great. This is exactly how it should be. And then they went and did other things that were not as forgiving for the digital face.
Yeah. That was kind of a big thing for me. It was pretty distracting for most of the film. But those few moments, I mean, there were a couple of moments where he wasn't moving too much, just making subtle facial expressions and not talking, and it looked great. And it was just like, I wish you wouldn't talk so much.
Please don't move your mouth.
just keep hold that pose.
Yeah.
that opening scene though. the thing that I mean, you know, we I think all of us knew that they were doing a younger Jeff Bridges, a CG younger Jeff Bridges, and I really wanted to know. Yeah, and I wanted to know, how's it going to fit in the story? Is it just a flashback? Is it most of the film? I didn't really know.
Yeah, no, it's the antagonist of the whole movie.
Yeah, I know. But and then but that opening scene where you see the back of his head for most of it, and I'm like, all right, maybe they're gonna tease it for now, but we're not gonna see it. And the camera comes around and slowly, and that first glimpse of his face, I was like, too soon.
Yeah,
too soon.
Like, no, I wish they would have held that card in until later in the movie. Yeah. You
know? Not even that. I wish they would have held the card for 5 years.
They made it work right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's going to be a while before we see like that. I think that's what makes Avatar such a revolutionary movie. It's like we saw that with the like this entire year we've seen 3D done poorly for the most part, and with this CG kind of facial mapping technology, I think. It seems like Avatar set the precedent, and now anything that's not as good as Avatar, we kind of look down on it. But it's probably going to be a while before we see that becoming the mainstream, where everything looks like Avatar. So,
oh yeah,
I think that's credit to Avatar. But yeah, definitely. that was one of the things that I didn't like about the movie. Also, speaking of the end of line club scene that Graham referenced earlier, the Zeus character,
Michael Sheen.
I
that was
really
an unnecessary character, wasn't it?
Yeah, that entire character could have been lost for me, and he was so over the top. I felt like he was from a different movie, and it was almost
he was Ziggy Stardust.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was
Yeah.
They modeled him after David Bowie.
Yeah.
But it worked.
Yeah.
Yeah. That or Malcolm McDowell in Clockwork Orange.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And I
there were bits of that in there too.
I felt like he was Johnny Depp in the Tim Burton movie. Like he was twirling his cane around and dancing, and it was just it felt so out of place in the movie for me. Like the humor. I know he was kind of like a comedic relief character, but just for the tone of the movie, I felt like he was just all wrong. Like up to that point, I felt like most of the humor, and this is like a typical action movie where they have. Okay, he'll have the one-liners like Sam Flynn. He'll be riding his bike, and you know, after he defeats somebody, he'll have a one-liner, and it'll be funny. But that's the time. It's not like a really broad, over-the-top type of humor. It's more fitting in, along the lines of an action movie. And I felt like it was up to that point. That's where all the humor had come from. Or there was some humor where when Sam was trying to figure out what was going on in the world, and everyone else knew exactly what was going on, but he didn't. Like, there was some humor about his confusion, but once that Zeus character came into play, like, that it just completely lost. It went over the top for me way too much. So, that character in general disappointed me. And it's weird because, like, Michael Sheen has played Tony Blair and other things, and kind of other roles he's had have been very good. And so, I'm not sure, you know, what the writers were thinking, what the actor was thinking, what the director was thinking. So, that just. For me, in general, that Zeus character was one of the low points of the movie for me.
You know, I have to say, I actually did kind of enjoy the character, though, as unnecessary as it was, and I loved the over the topness of it.
And I also think it depends on your sense of humor too, because the comedy is very subjective, and what someone thinks is funny, you know, another person doesn't. So, just for me, I did not laugh. At that character, so
okay. Yeah, see, right. I was just like, where did this come from? Like, what he's twirling the cane? Joel Grey? I mean, what the hell is this?
It shoots lasers?
Yeah, no. It was so bizarre. I couldn't help but laugh. Plus,
I really am I at the right movie?
Yeah. Michael Sheen, though, I am a fan of his. Mm. I really liked him in Frost Nixon, especially. And his stint on 30 Rock was very funny. But I am a fan of his. And so seeing him way out of his element, I think it shows that he is a pretty versatile actor. It was weird, just weird enough that I thought it was hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel the same way. I feel like I could have done without him being in the movie. I definitely like the scene he was in. Mm-hmm. I like that whole end of line sequence of the movie. But I could have done without the character. But I could be okay with him being in it for less time. Mm. I feel like they cut to him a few too many times. And
that's true. Trolling the cane.
And then after the whole scene where the disc gets stolen and they come back to him and there's this whole betrayal between, I mean, he betrayed them, but it's like a double betrayal. and they and you know and they set the bombs and the thing. I think that we could have lost that scene too.
Actually, but I had a question on that. Now, maybe this remains to be seen. Maybe in Tron 3, I don't know. But he knew that they planted the bombs there, and him and the girl, his little assistant. I felt like they just stood there and, oh, okay, we're going to get blown up now. Like,
yeah.
Why wouldn't they try to get away? I don't know. That was just confusing to me that they would just let themselves be blown up, but I don't know. Who knows? But yeah, that was one of my weaker parts. And also, the sudden change of heart of Tron, the character of Tron, which we're going into spoilers, so if you haven't seen the movie, then you probably shouldn't have been listening to this episode, but... Tron's all of a sudden he sees Flynn, I mean, who's been there for 20 years, and then all of a sudden he fights for the users. Like, that came out of left field for me, so that really was a left-hand turn for me that I wish they had set that up more, that okay, Tron's been struggling with going back to that side instead of the entire movie. I mean, besides flashbacks, the entire movie, he's pretty much on the side of Clue. And then, so you've been working for this guy for 20 years, and then all of a sudden, then, you know, you see his face, and then you turn back into Tron, the Tron that we know. So that was kind of out of left field for me.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one thing that I didn't like. And then kind of really the Jeff Bridges climax, the resolution that happened where I really wanted Kevin Flynn to get out.
Yeah.
And so when he kind of sacrificed himself, I was like, no. So that, I guess, just kind of for a personal selfish reason, I was like, no, he's been in here for 20 years. Let him get out. Let him see the real world again. But when he kind of.
Because that would have set up a great third movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe there's still a chance that he might still be able to get out, because they did show him downloading something onto that card at the end of the movie.
Uh-huh. True.
But. It's sort of like they're telling us he didn't make it.
Hmm. Yeah.
Tron 3, Wi-Fi.
I thought of that in 85.
I think it really is a setup for the... And to me, this feels more like a reboot than a sequel, because I feel like it's setting up the universe of Tron, and with Korra getting out into the real world. And also, we didn't mention Cillian Murphy's character. Which
was John Dillinger's son.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got an uncredited, like when I first saw, I was like, what? Am I watching The Dark Knight? What's going on here?
Why is he in every good sci-fi/ superhero movie?
Yeah, in Inception earlier this year. Yeah. And I love him as an actor. So that's another setup, I feel like, because again, I've been like totally immersing myself in reviews because I've been trying to figure out why people hate the movie. And one of the criticisms I saw somebody said was, well, why did they introduce him and then never come back to him? That was kind of a throwaway. And I really feel like that was a setup for what's to come next. I feel like they're setting this up to be a franchise.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Cillian Murphy, he is the son of the guy who was the big evil person in the first movie.
Yeah.
You know, John Dillinger and Sark were sort of the antagonists of, you know, but they created the Master Control Program and all that stuff. So it's essentially like he could be the line into the next movie of, like, they've established that he is like very high in the company, just like his father was. He's the one who is securing everything, which is what his father was doing. So it's like they're really setting that up.
And it seems
a very
like
short scene.
And it seems like he's kind of the equal to Kevin Flynn as far as, you know, because Kevin Flynn sets up the hack or the virus or whatever, and then he's the one who stops it. And
Sam Flynn.
Oh, yeah, Sam Flynn. So I think that they're also setting him up. Like, I think he's more talented than his father was, because in the original, his father just kind of stole Kevin Flynn's ideas.
Yeah, yeah. And then, he was really not. Yeah, he wasn't really the person that was moving, operating the strings of everything.
Yeah.
The Master Control Program kind of took on a mind of his own.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
He was more hack than hacker, if you will.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I feel like his son is a lot more talented and can provide a much stronger antagonist for another movie. I heard they're doing a TV show as well. Have you guys heard anything about this?
Oh, I hope not.
I heard something about it, but I would not be looking forward to that. I'd probably watch, but I wouldn't.
Yeah, it seems like they're setting, and I'm not sure if it's going to be animated or live action, but like I said, it seems like Disney really wants this franchise to succeed, which is, kind of odd because they've sat on it for 28 years. I'm surprised that they
didn't support it when it was happening. I think they looked at how beloved it became and they're like, ooh, we could reboot that like Batman and make money. You know, like I think they I think that's what has created this renewed interest in Tron.
Yeah.
Right, because the original movie, Disney originally backed it after nobody else would buy the unfinished part of the movie that Steven Lisberger had done. And so they pitched it to Disney as an animated film, and Disney was like, oh, well, we want to do some more risky stuff, so yeah, we'll do this, and here's, you know, $10 million and make it.
Yeah.
Oh. But then when they made the movie, they started to market it and then pulled back all of their marketing.
Mm. Yeah.
So if there was a reason why the movie wasn't a huge smashing success, it was because Disney didn't support it.
Mm. And
now they're like, oh yeah, this is our franchise, you know?
Yeah. And it's really, and I forgot to say this earlier when I was talking about, when we were talking about the little subtitles that came up at the beginning, the little message of, you know, keep your 3D glasses on the entire time. I felt like with that statement, and then also outside of that, with Disney not releasing the first Tron on Blu-ray right before, I feel like they kind of...
There's still some of that there.
Yeah. Yep. I feel like they're trying to... Like, they're hesitant, they're scared, and they're trying to please everybody. And I think they went a little too far. Like, I wish they had released the first Tron on Blu-ray and got... I think
they would have been surprised at how well received the original movie would have been to people that were like, oh, they're making this new one. I should watch the first one.
Yeah. Yeah. So
they were worried that people were going to watch the first one and be like, oh, this new one's going to be awful.
Yeah.
Which is not what a reasonable person would think.
Yeah.
You know?
And that also led, I mean, that move right there was another reason why I went into watching the first one with low expectations. I was like, man, Disney's not even behind it. So
yeah.
I do look forward to the eventual Blu-ray release with all the special features on it, because I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of the making of stuff.
And they said that they're going like digitally remastering a bunch of the stuff in the original movie for Blu-ray.
Yeah.
They spent 2 years on it, they said. Wow.
Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to that. Some quick things that I, like I said, came across while looking at some of the reviews. Somebody, like, it seems like people's, at least, you know, the blogosphere and comment section trolls, if you like this movie, if you put a good review of it, like I saw on Slash Film, the reviewer wrote a positive review, and
you got torn apart in the comments.
Yeah, in the comment section, people were like, "Oh, how much does Disney pay you? Like, are you a Disney employee?" So it's,
I hate that. So
people
much.
Say that. People say that whenever they disagree with a review, though. Come on.
Yeah, and it's like
true.
The reviewer can't have his own opinion.
Yeah,
I don't.
But to challenge that. The integrity of somebody because they,
I know, had,
they enjoyed the movie is just such a it's awful.
Yeah. Welcome to the internet.
I know, and that, like, I've gotten more. You know, the internet has really kind of been like disenfranchising me over the last couple of years, where I'm just like, comments are awful. Like, anywhere. Yeah. If you go to anywhere online that people are allowed to speak on comments in the form of comments, it's never a constructive conversation.
Yeah.
So,
and that's disappointing.
Yeah.
But also, some of the other things that I came across were some critic was asking about Jeff Bridges' physical body. Where was his physical body this entire time? And same thing with Sam Flynn's character.
And ask that of the original movie?
Yeah. And,
you know, because the same thing happened in the original movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, to my understanding, the physical body gets transported into the digital world. That's what the laser does, is it converts your... so the critic, and I can't remember if it was Ebert or not, but they were thinking that his body was not, like, it was still in the physical world somewhere, decaying and... Like, because he didn't eat, he should have been dead. But I think that was a complete, and that was again,
I was reading into it quite a bit.
Yeah, and that was that they were giving that as a negative reason for why the movie was bad, and so
for not explaining that to me.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people's negative things can be explained. It's just if you actually take the time to understand what's actually going on. So that was another thing. Another frequent complaint that I saw, or sometimes it's a positive, but a lot of people were saying that Jeff Bridges is just playing the dude from The Big Lebowski.
I really like to chat about this. It's like, you know, Tron wasn't a the Tron Legacy wasn't a perfect movie, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to defend it because I know it's not perfect, but the character of Kevin Flynn, when you watch the original Tron, he's playing Kevin Flynn.
Yeah.
The dude, let me back up a little bit. Kevin Flynn is in the 80s,
yes,
and it's perfectly acceptable to say dude, man, rad, totally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the dude was played in The Big Lebowski in 1998, 20 years later, as just an old guy that was still stuck in the 80s or early 70s. You know, so the characters are very similar, but that doesn't mean that Jeff Bridges was playing the dude. He was playing Kevin Flynn.
Yeah, and
he did a pretty darn good job of it.
Yeah.
And I saw Jeff Bridges come out and talk about that. That was the way the character was written, even way before The Big Lebowski came out, that Kevin Flynn was kind of that, you know, hippie type of guy. And so he's just returning to that. And then also people were, so a lot of people were coming out and saying that, oh, he's being lazy, he's just playing the dude again, and that's a negative part of the film.
No, he was playing Kevin Flynn, and he did a great job.
Yeah.
I think people that are pointing out that he was playing the dude are just are really reaching for something to complain about, in my opinion, because that was a very believable picking up a role 30 years later.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And because you had played a character that had sort of the same mannerisms and tropes doesn't mean that you are falling back on one role over another. That's really giving that's discrediting the amazing talent of Jeff Bridges.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
He's a better actor than that.
Yeah. So that was another thing that I kind of wanted to talk about. And so like I said, a lot of I'm right there with you, Graham, and I'm with you, Frank. I don't think it's a perfect movie either, but for 2 hours, I was entertained more than a lot of, like, I've seen a lot of movies this year, and I was more engaged in this movie than most films. And that's another thing. A lot of people were coming out and talking about it was slow in the middle or slow at the end. And I, at least the first time and the second time I watched it as well, I was, there was not a boring moment for me. I was there from the start to the finish. I was in that world and I was involved and I was, okay, who are the ISOs and what's this? And I wanted to know more and more and more. And just people were telling me they fell asleep and they're bored. And like, that is another thing that just blows my mind. I was like, how can you be bored with these light cycles running around and this amazing, like the amazing Daft Punk score that's going on? It's just, I don't know how you can be bored in this movie.
The first time I saw it, I was totally engaged the entire time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All of the exposition, the character development, all that stuff, I was just like, ooh, what? Tell me more. You know, I was curious about all the stuff because they were essentially building this new world around this movie. The second time I saw it, I did notice places where things slowed down, but that was because I knew what they were already talking about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that was to be expected. There were places, I mean, the movie does kind of do a roller coaster type thing where it gets really, really exciting and then it's kind of talking for a while. Really, really exciting and now we're talking more, you know. So I think that some people have legitimate, you know, claims to having slow areas of the film. But upon that first viewing, I was totally, all of the talking and developing the story and setting the rules of the world, I was in for that for sure.
Yeah, and I think it is, like you said, it is a, that's exactly what it is, a roller coaster ride, and I think that's a good thing. Like, as an action movie and this type of big budget, special effects laden movie, being a thrilling movie and being a roller coaster ride is a good thing. So, before we wrap up here, I wanted to get your guys' take on what you just mentioned, Graham, as far as the character development. I saw it was another complaint a lot of people had where they were saying the characters there are no arcs in this movie. They are, the way that they start out is the way that they finish the movie. And I didn't see that. I saw development from Jeff Bridges' character, from the son, from Cora. I saw a lot of development and I was, like I said, thoroughly engaged and entertained throughout the movie. So I wanted to get your guys' take. Did you have a similar notion that there wasn't any character development, or did you have the opposite effect?
I felt like it was there, definitely, but I see what people are saying. where this movie sort of I mean, it has a beginning, a middle, and an end, mm-hmm. but what happens at the end has really nothing to do with what, you know, what the movie was trying to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like the ending wasn't a resolution mm-hmm. of something. Essentially, it was, though. If you really were paying attention to the story,
Yeah. They
were trying to stop Clue, and they did that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're looking at Clue as this non-essential character that is just this program that needs to be stopped, I think some people that are complaining about the arcs in the story maybe aren't really understanding what the movie was trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
They were kind of missing what the movie was setting out to do. I think the movie did a really good job of setting up the conflict and resolving it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the story of Sam Flynn in this movie, it brought him from being this mischievous, bratty kid who just didn't want anything to do with his father's old company because he was angry at the management and he was angry at the way things had turned out in his life. And he went from being that whiny kid to growing up dealing with it and taking matters into his own hands. And he has Cora as sort of a guide now, you know,
I think a board meeting to change the company.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that is a huge progression. And I think that everything that happens when we're on the grid is, it shapes him, you know, that's, yeah. If it wasn't for that experience, he wouldn't have had. So I think there is at the very least in his character, huge development. I think though, more than anything else, this movie is like a morality play.
Mm.
Because it talks about, it shows Clue as this dictator who literally commits genocide to make this perfect world that he's set out to create. And the moral of the story, if a little heavy-handed, from the mouth of Jeff Bridges, is that we can't know perfect.
Mm.
Perfect is we can't.
That's
we can't
what I strive. Got from the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when and they, for me, that
confronts Clue and says it was right there in front of your face the whole time that you.
Yeah.
That perfection is unattainable, but it's perfect that it is that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
and you see the consequences of what happens when you become obsessed with trying to achieve perfection.
Yeah.
That's another
exactly.
Thing. But Frank. Actually, speaking of Sam Flynn, I actually wanted to ask you guys his opinion on Garrett Hudlund. This is the first time I've seen him in a film.
Yeah, me too.
And I've gotten a lot of people telling me that he was Hayden Christensen. It was the exact same thing as the prequels. He was a wooden actor. Like, what did you guys think about Garrett Hudlund's performance in the movie?
I didn't get that at all.
No.
I really felt like he did a great job. I was a little concerned at first at the whole motorcycle breaking into the company thing. But as soon as some of that started to get going, like after he jumped off the building and ran from the cops, like I was in like after mm-hmm. that, I was like, he's actually pretty good. And then they did the whole scene between him and Alan Bradley in his apartment / shipyard container thing.
Yeah.
And then that's when I started picking up, like, all right, I like this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Frank, you are an expert on the prequels. What did you think about that?
Expert.
he's better than Hayden Christensen. he kind of looks like him, but other than that, not really. Yeah. No, I didn't even really think about that.
Yeah, I had that same thing because that would have lost me. If I just felt his acting was so bad that I couldn't, you know, relate to the main character. I couldn't see his struggle, that I would have been lost by that. And it would have taken me out of the fantasy of the film. Oh, it's just a guy acting. It's not, but I didn't get any of that. And, you know, another thing that immersed me in the world was that we are taking this journey with him, the main character. And once we are just as lost as he is when he gets into the digital world and we're trying to figure out everything. And that's, you know, that's a tried and true storytelling trope that we've seen time and time again, but it works. And in this movie, it worked for me. I was completely engaged. Like, what is going on? And obviously you're going to lose that upon repeat viewings of it over and over again. But still I had that sense of wonder and amazement when I was watching it the first time. And we talked a little bit about Tron and Alan Bradley, but I also feel like Bruce Boxleitner is another actor that I really enjoyed. And after the first Tron, I mean, I didn't really see him too much between the two movies, but he's not in the movie very much. But when his presence comes on screen, I think he has a very good, very good
spot on.
Yeah.
He did a great job reprising that role.
Yeah.
Very much so. Yeah.
So, yeah, I think overall we all enjoyed the movie. We didn't think it was a perfect movie. There are flaws in it, but it was exactly what I expected it to be, what I wanted it to be. And my number one thing, the best part of this movie, is the Daft Punk score, which anytime I want to go back to the world of Tron, I'll just put on that soundtrack and I'll listen to it. So that was my overall thoughts on the movie. Frank, what did you think about Tron Legacy before I ask you, Frank, I forgot to mention that this movie had the absolute coolest Walt Disney castle in any Disney movie.
Yes. Like, if you weren't already like taken completely into this movie world right as soon as they showed that logo, then I don't know what, you know.
Yeah, and
yeah, definitely.
Both times I watched it, people behind me, that is cool. Like, there was multiple people saying how cool it was. So I really, and real quick, I forgot. In my first screening, the audience members, there was two guys dressed up like characters from Tron, and they had these leather jackets on and they had little lights, and they actually looked like they were extras in the movie. Like, they did a very good job on their suits. So especially when the lights went down and their lights were lit up, like,
nice.
I was like, okay, that is cool. And then I saw a little kid with, after the movie, I saw him with one of the original Tron helmets on, and I was like, that's not as cool.
I want those electroluminescent lights in my clothing in the next.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like,
go to a rave.
If it's possible in movies, why is that not at the Gap right now? Like, right.
Go to a rave dressed like that, you're the coolest guy at the party instantly.
Yeah. So, okay, Frank, I'm sorry I interrupted you, but what were your overall thoughts on Tron Legacy?
No, I mean, I agree with what you said, Justin. It was really a really fun movie, really engaging movie, not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. But one of my favorite movies of the year, just from how fun it was and how engrossing it was, soundtrack outstanding. One thing we didn't really talk about was Olivia Wilde. I was actually really impressed with her performance.
Amazing.
I thought she really didn't come across as just the eye candy or the sexy girl who's there to be a romantic interest for Sam or anything. She was actually a really important part of the story, and I wanted to see her get out. Mm-hmm. So I thought she turned in a really good performance. Loved it overall. Not Oscar material, at least not for Best Picture or anything like that. But I would definitely like to see it get recognition for the score, for the visuals.
Yeah. I was going to say real quick. With the original Tron, they didn't get nominated for special effects because the Motion Picture Academy thought that they cheated by using computers. So it's funny how 30 years later. But yeah. Oh, continue.
No, that's just about it. I really enjoyed it, and I look forward to seeing it again possibly today.
Ah,
awesome.
And Graham, what were your overall thoughts on Tron Legacy?
I would say that this movie delivered everything that I wanted it to. When I heard they were making a new Tron, I was like, I had a couple of things that I knew I wanted to see. I wanted to see a really amazing visual experience. I wanted it to take me out of the real world for a while, and it did. It hit all of the things that I wanted it to hit. I got to see amazing light cycle battles, the Disc Wars stuff, some of the best digital 3D sets and things that I've seen in years. I mean, this really was, just like the original movie, an animated film with live action actors in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just 30 years later, and now that our technology has gotten much, much better. Again, I feel like the reaction to this movie, it was a little too harsh. I think that people might have expected too much from it, but it delivered everything I wanted it to. I had an enjoyable time. I really liked it. It even affected me afterwards. Like,
the Tetris effect that some people claim to have. I had the Tron effect.
Yeah.
I was driving home after the movie, and I happened to be listening to the soundtrack because I love the Daft Punk score as well. And I was just like, man, everything's digital and ones and zeros, and that's a grid, and I'm following a line on my way home. You know, like, and so, like, it affected me. And I've, like, haven't been very many movies where I just got completely taken into that experience for any amount of time. And I enjoyed it for that. I got the experience that I paid for.
Yeah, I did the exact same thing. I was speeding down the highway playing the Tron score, and I thought I was on a light cycle. So, yeah. I had the exact same experience.
So if a movie can do that, then mission accomplished, you know? Like, it's like that's what movies are meant to do. They're meant to take you out of the real world for a while and give you an experience. And I think they did that. They stayed faithful to the source material, which is more than most movies can say that are reboots of things. I mean, they really tried to respect the original movie while creating this entirely new Tron universe.
Yeah.
So I give him credit for that for sure. And I think I'm disappointed in the reaction among people that should like this movie but don't.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a movie that was made for geeks, for that demographic.
Yeah, there was
for the Comic-Con audience, and yet some of them are just not enjoying it. And I'm like, this movie had everything that you wanted and you're trashing it because of things that wouldn't have made the movie any better.
Yeah, and I had the exact same reaction, Graham. I actually heard, I haven't watched it yet, but I heard all of the Totally Rad Show guys hated it. And I was very surprised by that. Yeah, I was shocked by a lot of people's reactions. So, again, I think it's a very polarizing movie. And, you know, if you don't like it, that's fine. But I just don't understand your point of view. And
we'll agree to disagree.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Graham, I have one question. You brought up Comic-Con. Were you at the Tron panel at San Diego Comic-Con?
I wasn't, but here's a fun fact. Audience sounds of them yelling Disc Wars and D-Rez and the stomping sounds were recorded at that panel.
Oh, wow.
That's why I asked. Yeah, I was wondering if you were in the movie.
I'm not in the movie because I go to Comic-Con and I just zone out and I don't go to any panel because it's such a just stressful experience to wait in 2 mile long lines without ever thinking you might get in. So I just avoid that altogether and then talk to people that were in it later. Huh? Yeah. But that was very cool. They actually had people from Skywalker Sound in the audience. Ooh. And they had stuff flash up on screen and recorded them yelling Rensler and D-Rez and Disc Wars. And that was used in the movie as far as I know. So yeah.
Excellent cool. sound design, excellent score.
Oh, and speaking of that, there's a really cool 10-minute video that we may be able to link to.
Yes.
That's all about the sound design of this movie, and it will make you appreciate everything you were hearing.
Oh, yeah, I just watched that yesterday, yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah, I think we will link on this post here. So thanks for that, Graham. And speaking of Graham, where can our listeners find everything that you do on the internet?
I'm all over the place, so just... revision3.com is where you will find me most of the time. I host a show called App Judgment. It's probably the one podcast I do regularly now. I used to do a full podcast every week on the NBC show Heroes over at 10th Wonder or heroespodcast.com. So if you were into that show, that might be a good show to check out. But revision3.com, I'm an editor over there. I edit their shows Dignation and Texilla, App Judgment. The list goes on.
Yeah, and I must say, every time an App Judgment episode comes on where Graham's face is the first one I see, I always get a little excited. So everyone should check that out. And my co-host on the Tech Ramblings podcast, Mr. Frank Ramblings, you are also very heavily distributed about the interwebs. Where are you on the internet?
I do a number of podcasts. I do Tech Ramblings with Justin. I still do a show about the canceled Joss Whedon Dollhouse. That was canceled. Yeah. Maybe you heard about it. But there's a comic, so we're covering the comic now.
Cool.
I do a couple other shows too. You can find it all at frankramblings.com.
Excellent. And of course, you can always find us on twitter.com/flicksofdoom. If you have any questions or comments, email us flicksofdoom@gmail.com. And for everything else we're up to, head over to geeksofdoom.com. So my thanks again to my two favorite Digital Demons, Mr. Frank Ramblings, and Mr. Graham Hancock for joining us on this episode.
And thank you very much.
Hopefully you guys can come back again and talk some more movies with us.
So, love to.
It would be a pleasure.
Thanks again for listening, everybody. And until next week, see ya.
End of line.
Yeah.